Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and I am joined by Catrere. It is a big night for us. We are talking about the second half of 1995, which what happens in the second half of 1995? Share that with us, Catrere.
Nitro debuts.
Yes, huge deal.
And a really amazingly shitty pay-per-view in October.
Yes.
What else? We have Fall Brawl in September. We have the Clash of the Champions in August. Bunch of stuff.
Yes, all right. So where exactly did we leave off?
I believe we left off at we were heading into the Clash of the Champions on August 6, 1995 from Daytona Beach, Florida at the Ocean Center. And this was on a Sunday, so they did the main event live right before the show. So you got, like, instead of 2 hours, you got, like, 3 hours of wrestling.
Yes, which is great. It
yeah, that was pretty cool.
I mean, the way they worked those shows out, because clashes, they seemed to really bounce around. I mean, it really was. It was just bounced around, you know, from day to day. There never was, like, you know, like WCW Saturday Night would always be on Saturday night. Nitro's always on Monday. And pay-per-views, like back in the early 90s, they would jump around on days, especially WWF. But for this, like, the clashes, like, sometimes they'd be on Wednesday, sometimes they'd be on Tuesday, sometimes they'd be on Thursdays. And this one was on a Sunday, which was...
Yeah.
I don't know. I always found that kind of weird.
I don't know. They just bounced those around, and they usually just did what, like maybe four or five.
Yeah, it was definitely something like that.
Yeah.
All right, so we're at the Clash, and I remember watching this Clash very distinctly live because the very first match is Sting and Road Warrior Hawk against Ming and Kurosawa. And Kurosawa, like, had just kind of broke on the scene, like, in WCW.
This was his first match,
it had to have been, because, like, I believe they might have taped it a little bit before, but I could have swore I saw him, like, a Worldwide a couple times before.
May have been vignettes or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, this was, I mean, but it was scheduled to be his, you know, his big,
debut,
I guess. Yes, yes.
They beat him.
So, and of course, Hawk beat him, which, you know, what, this is WCW, of course, hell of a debut for him. And we have, Ming and Sting are fighting outside, and Kurosawa gets on Road Warrior Hawk, and he puts on this arm bar, and, like, he does it in such a, like, a convincing fashion, at least to me, that, like, I really thought it was broken, you know, because, like, I was kind of at that point at this age where I knew it was fake, but, you know, you didn't really know, like, at least when I was, because I was a child, you know, I didn't really know, so, I don't know,
yeah,
I remember
just,
this was very just, realistic to me.
He just, like, sat right on his back and put his arm between his legs and just yanked on it.
And, yeah, it was crazy.
And the announcer sold it great. They sold that it was broken when it happened.
Yeah, yeah. It was. Yeah, they act like they heard a snap, right?
Yeah.
Gosh, great, great television. DDP and Alex Wright had a match, and this was kind of the beginning of the DDP push.
Yeah,
like.
This is the start
of it. He's been injured. Yeah, he's been injured. And he got injured, I believe, in like 92, 93. And then he came back after like a year and a half. And by the time he got, you know, by the time he was back, Bischoff was in power, and he was Bischoff's boy. They were buddies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was almost immediately that he started getting, like, you know, a lower-level push. But, I mean, still a solid push nonetheless. And
when he was doing the money gimmick where he won the lottery. And
Yes.
And it actually came out that Kimberly won the lottery, and he was the one controlling all the money or something like that.
Yes, and they actually had an article about it in WCW Magazine, because I was 12 years old. So at 12 years old, WCW Magazine and WWF Magazine and all those magazines were just awesome. And PWI, of course. And I remember reading the article about this, you know, like it just kind of showed him, you know, in nice cars. Because, like, in wrestling magazines, when they want to show people rich, they always put them in front of, like, a big house. It always seems like it's almost, like, the same big house, like, for every wrestler. With,
yeah.
like a red Corvette or something, you know what I mean? Smoking a cigar or something. I don't know. It was pretty funny. But Alex Price had been getting a push previous to this. So, you know, it was, you know, a bigger win for DDP.
This is when now Alex Wright started to go down a little bit. You remember he had lost to Arn Anderson at Slamboree. See, I didn't think much of DDP at this time, but I said, man, Alex Wright's really falling off. He's losing to Diamond Dallas Page.
Yes. I mean, you can't do anything but laugh. You know what I mean?
And I was the most surprised person in the world when DDP actually got over as well as he did as a babyface. I mean, that was kind of shocking to me. But he was in the right. He had the right person behind him pushing him, and he had the perfect finishing maneuver. So, you know.
Well, for that, I mean, we'll get to that when we get to that. But I mean, him turning face was just the timing was perfect, absolutely perfect for it. And because they were so hot as heels, anybody that goes against them, the NWO at the time, anybody that would have won against them, I mean, it was insane. It was insane how like, the pop for that was just crazy.
Yeah, he was really the first one to get one over on them.
Yes, he really was. All right, so the Renegade, they're continuing the Renegade push. And this was, everybody knew this was garbage. And he beat Paul Orndorff, you know, in a couple of minutes, and it was a crappy match.
Yeah, this is a remake from Bash at the Beach, because they said Orndorff had his shoulder up on the pinfall at Bash at the Beach, so this was a rematch from that.
Yes. The first match was bad, so the second match, of course, was even worse. Like I said, Renegade was so horrible. He's such a bad wrestler. This upcoming storyline right here, it's Sister Sherry and Harlem Heat defeated Rob Parker and Dirty Dick Slater and Bunkhouse Buck. And Sherry pinned Colonel Parker, not on purpose, because she jumped on him to kiss him. And so they have this weird storyline where didn't she get hit in the head or something? I believe she got hit in the head, and all of a sudden
maybe she took a bump or something.
Yes, something happened, but then when she woke up or every time after that, she was in love with Colonel Parker.
Yeah.
And so they began a storyline where they're going to get married. And it kind of, this was like the first serious part of that storyline was at this clash, and it was just, it was so crazy. I loved this whole thing.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite angles that they were doing at the time. I mean, just Colonel Parker, you know, he's like being the southern gentleman trying to woo this pretty young lady, and it was good stuff. It was good stuff. I still go back on YouTube and watch some of that stuff, like the wind and stuff like that. But we'll get to that later.
One thing that people don't realize is, like, Colonel Robert Parker was really always underrated as a manager and just a television character. I mean,
yeah.
They WWF, like, when they had him as Tennessee Lee, really, I thought that they've done stuff with him. Even though it was, like, kind of like, you know, that Attitude Era, you know, time, like, it was starting to be Attitude Era. I don't know. I always thought they could have done more with him, and WCW should have done more with him just because, I mean, he was such a good, like, heel manager. I mean, like, you know, I know they don't really use managers anymore, but, I mean, gosh, wasn't he just so great?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the pairing with Steve Austin. I thought that was really, really good stuff.
That was
nice. You had the perfect guy for him to manage right there.
Yeah, so it really was. It really was. And one of another really stupid thing was Vader wrestled Arn Anderson and Ric Flair in a handicap match. And this was like they're starting to do the Vader babyface turn, which was really the only thing left you could have done with him because he was killed off by Hogan. So
yeah.
There's really nothing you could do with him after this except for turn a babyface because he's dead as a heel. So he beats them in a handicap match. And then Flair and Arn Anderson argue, and it's beginning to do this feud to set up a match, not necessarily a feud, to set up a match between Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. And anybody that has ever watched WCW would have been excited for this because Ric Flair and Arn Anderson were always best friends, and everybody always knew that. You know, oh, that's my best friend Arn Anderson, that's my best friend Ric Flair. And the whole, I don't know, the whole build-up for that is, I don't know, it was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, see, I kind of got two different schools of thought on this. I mean, it's like one of those dream matches that you never thought you'd see, and you want to see, but at the same time, it's Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. They should be together. They shouldn't be fighting each other, you know?
No, I understand that, but I mean, it was all for a bigger, you know, a bigger picture.
I'm just saying, you know, I don't think people want to see Jeff and Matt Hardy fight. You know, they want to see those guys together, and really when they have fought, it's never really gotten over. It's like, no, I don't think anybody wants to see Hulk fight Animal. You know, stuff like that.
When it works, it works. At the same time, there was Triple H and Shawn Michaels were always there. I mean, they're a tag team, and they were like aligned for a long, long period of time. And everybody always knew them as DX. And then when they had their feud, it was really good. You know, I guess just because I
go back to like 1985 when Flair and Arn like first got together, and you know, through all those years, I just could never fathom. Having them going against one another, it just seems weird. Not that
yeah,
I didn't enjoy it. It's just odd to me.
And the thing about the Flair Arn feud, like until they actually had the match, you didn't really know who the heel was and who the babyface was.
Yeah.
Like you kind of did, but I mean, it actually seemed like Arn Anderson was getting used by Ric Flair, and he was getting sick of it. So you
yeah,
only saw Arn Anderson with them.
Because you remember they did the match with Alex Wright at Center Stage with Flair and Alex Wright, and you know Flair tried to get Arn to help him to the ropes, and Arn just like was shaking his head, and that's kind of went from there.
Another thing that we should kind of point out was there was. It had happened before this. Hogan got attacked by the whole. He entered the Dungeon of Doom. I mean, should we play that clip?
Yeah. I'll go ahead and play it.
All right, let's go.
Hurry, my son, get away from the stove. The real white finger tiger approaches. The paint has been. Hurry! Hurry, my son!
smell his presence also.
I feel him.
Oh.
Where am I? There's no Hulkamaniac here. I've never been here before. Ah, it's not hot. What is this place? I know you. I know you too. You two are behind the demise of Hulkamania. I know about the Zodiac. I know about the dangerous Kamala. Hell yeah. I know about the Man-Eater, the Shark, but Instant Stone is a legacy, the immortality of Hulkamania, and you too will be buried beneath us.
You don't understand, Hogan. This is where darkness dwells and lives. Nobody has ever been able to defeat the immortal Hulk Hogan, except yourself. You see, Hogan, you're the one that created me. And because of that, it's this simple. Your demise is etched in.
Power is a million times greater than the power of Hulkamania. I am the greatest giant to ever walk the face of the earth. And I am the one true immortal.
Good Lord.
After that, Hogan confronted them, and this was on the show that we're watching, right?
Yeah.
The Clash, and Vader fought Vader, who's been feuding with Hogan, which, you know, I'm going to get into. I'm just going to explain what happened. Vader, you know, clears out the whole Dungeon of Doom like by himself, essentially, to help Hogan, and has like a standoff with the giant. So Vader is like officially a babyface. And so we have that going for us. We know this. But that little piece of history that everybody just heard was, I mean, Hulk Hogan acting 101 was right there. The part where he actually, like, I know you guys heard it. It's, he goes, ah, it's not hot. He like touches this water, and he like preemptively says like ouch, but it doesn't hurt him. So then he just
maybe
tells
it's too
him
cold.
That.
Maybe it's too
yeah,
cold.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was ice cold. You don't know, but I mean this. It's one of those things that you can watch on YouTube over and over and over again.
At the beginning of it, he's all of a sudden you see this wall collapse and Hogan falls into the Dungeon of Doom. I wonder if he just went, like, around, like, pushing walls like Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom waiting for one of them to move or something. I don't know. Did he just lean over to a wall and just fall into the dungeon? I don't know how he got in there in the first place. And
yeah, and you don't know this, but...
There were no Hulkamaniacs there. He was right.
Yeah, there's no Hulk... But then Vader shows up. And then, like, Sting and Jimmy Hart... They actually help Hogan. So where did they come from, too? Were they hanging out
there?
They
were watching the monitor in the back, and they said, we got to get to the Dungeon of Doom.
Yes, yes. It's,
like the back.
I mean, like, yeah, like, there is a Dungeon of Doom at the arena. Like WCW shows up at the arena. Let's say that there's a Norfolk scope, okay? They set up the ring. They put in railings. And then they build a Dungeon of Doom for, you know, everybody to go hang out in, like the Master and the Taskmaster, which I always thought that was really stupid, that one was the Master and the other one was the Taskmaster. So what this is building up to is a Fall Brawl match between it's going to be Vader, Hulk Hogan, Sting, and the Macho Man versus the Dungeon of Doom.
But yeah, it was Zodiac, Shark.
Zodiac, Kamala, the Shark.
Shark, and Ming. Do you remember Ming was in there? Yeah.
Yes, Ming joined very shortly after this Clash of the Champions. It might have been a week or two later. I mean,
remember he had that weird helmet on?
Yes.
He was breathing through? It was weird.
Yes, it was a very weird thing, but I mean, he was a very good addition to the Dungeon of Doom. And like,
oh, yeah, everybody else was shit.
Yeah, as much flack as the Dungeon got, like, Ming joining them, and they were all shitty wrestlers, but they were a good heel group because they were, like, you know, they were goofy, and they made these funny videos that, you know, they're not supposed to be funny, but they're hilarious. I've always been a fan of it. I have a t-shirt of the Dungeon of Doom. You know, they're just, I don't know, I always liked them, simply. Well, so they immediately following this clash, they have a Fall Brawl Control Center. And they announce that Vader is teaming, you know, this match is happening. Well, before they even get their feet wet on promoting the show, Vader gets in a fight with Paul Orndorff backstage the end of August at Center Stage. And Paul Orndorff is not only just a wrestler, but he's an agent as well. At this point, he's kind of ending his wrestling career. His career is coming to an end very shortly. I mean, like, I know for a fact he doesn't last the end of the year as a wrestler. And explain the story. I mean, I don't know the exact story, and I'm sure you probably know it better than I do.
I think the story was that it was either they wanted Vader to do some promos, and Vader was always one of those people, you know, just a big grumpy person. He's just and a bully, and so he's giving shit about having to do these promos, and I think he gets in a confrontation with Paul Orndorff, and I think he hits Orndorff, and Orndorff goes down, and then Vader in the interview said he realized what he had done, and he said, "Oh man," he said, "Paul, are you all right?" And then Paul gets up and just knocks him over and starts kicking the shit out of him with his flip flops on.
Yeah, he was wearing shower shoes.
Yeah, that's all Paul Orndorff on with his flip flops, and anyway, Vader got sent home, and Vader got fired because he's first blow, so that's how that went. And you know, there's always been the story about how Paul Orndorff beat up Vader. Totally different. You never know what's the truth.
The only reason I believe it is because there's so many people that have said this. Even Dave Sullivan said that he saw it happen. Or you know, he knew that happened. Like, you know, just beat the shit out of Vader.
And Paul Orndorff is a legit badass, too. I mean, he's one of those tough sons of bitches.
Yes. Yes. All right, so Fall Brawl. We're getting to Fall Brawl.
I didn't want to forget the reason Vader was going to be in the match. You remember, because he said he wanted another title shot. That's the only reason he helped him to get another title shot down the road, which is why he came and helped him out in the Dungeon Doom. And it was funny because, you know, they shot those training videos with Vader and Sting and Macho Man and Hogan all in camouflage in those vignettes just training for Fall Brawl, and then he was out.
Which is great. Great. And the cool thing about it is, I mean, how do you even, you know, say how this isn't awesome? But before the show, we're gonna get to because I believe Nitro premiered on the 4th of September. So on that very first Nitro, Vader was gone. They announced either on the 4th or the 11th that Vader is gone. Oh, no, it was the 11th. And they had this like thing showing that Vader, like they showed all this training because they're all wearing camouflage. Apparently Hogan started an army, which they're, for some reason they're all wearing camouflage. And they announced that Vader didn't sign the right paperwork and that he had went AWOL.
Yeah.
And like,
right.
And they like put this like huge thing like you know, the scrolls that go across the bottom of the screen is saying like Vader went AWOL. He will not be there. So we're at the very first Nitro, and beginning of September, and Nitro started off extremely hot. It was a big show, and they wanted to say that it was going to be a big show because WCW Saturday Night had fallen so far off a cliff that they knew that they had to do, if they were going to be in prime time, they had to put, you know, prime time matches on there.
Yeah.
So they immediately started with Brian Pillman versus Jushin Liger, which Brian Pillman's not the same wrestler, but they still had a pretty good little match to open the show up on this very first Nitro. And then they had Sting wrestle Ric Flair, and Ric Flair is a, like, still kind of healing it, but also, like, in this weird in-between, like, tweener thing where you don't know where he's at. So it was kind of a weird match to put on that first show, but, I mean, they did Sting and Ric Flair on that first show. And then, of course, Hogan had to wrestle and beat Big Bubba Rogers, which also, you know, featured the legendary commentary debut of Steve Mongo McMichael and his little dog.
God, I was so glad when he became a wrestler and got in the ring, got out of the commentary booth. I'd rather watch him as a wrestler than listen to him.
Yes. I mean, so did I. I mean, but one thing that we need to, you know, discuss is that on the very first... Nitro, Lex Luger jumped from WWF, who he had wrestled the night before somewhere in Canada, and
Without a contract.
Yeah, he was working without a contract, and he had left, or he had given Vince McMahon a note saying that he considered himself a free agent about a month before. Vince put it in his briefcase, forgot about it, and didn't even think, you know, that Luger was going to go anywhere. They were negotiating a contract, apparently. But he decided to go to WCW instead. So he comes back to WCW, immediately put in, like, a big main event position.
Perfect timing with the Vader thing. It's almost too
long. It was very perfect time. And honestly, I kind of think Vader's release kind of had something to do with this. Like, because... they were both big contracts, you know what I mean? And, like, honestly,
yeah.
I think, like, and I've always felt that Vader was replaced by Lex Luger, which, you know, say what you want about that. And so WCW, at this time, because they know that it's going to be a big, the WCW Monday Night Show is going to be a big show. And Luger is now going to be on the Hogan team. So, Luger said he would be willing to, you know, do the match with Hogan, or be in that match as long as he got a match with Hogan the next week for the title. And as part of WCW having that big show, you know, the big show feel, they started signing people up. A lot of the ECW talent and a lot of people from, or a lot of luchadors and people from Japan. I mean, WCW increased their roster in about a year span between September to September from 95 to 96. They probably added 50 guys. I mean, it's not an exaggeration either.
And I mean when you get up to like, you know, like 97 or 98, they probably had the biggest roster in the history of the business, I'd say.
Yes. I mean, I really don't think it's an exaggeration for like how many people they signed. I mean, there was a lot of people put in or brought into WCW at this time, and so the second Nitro, which I believe this is the one that they gave away the results, correct?
Yeah, this was the one that was, this was one that, because Raw was preempted the Monday before, so this was the first really head-to-head because the matches had been pre-taped, and Bischoff said, don't bother turning to the other channel. Shawn Michaels wins with the, wins, beats Sid Vicious with a super kick that you, that wouldn't even get you a black belt in karate class.
Yes, yes. Or no, he's in a purple belt.
So, something like that.
Yes.
Pretty good. I thought that, you know, it's dirty pool, but, you know, whatever. I like it.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, it was.
Not like Vince McMahon has never done anything to anybody. So, you know, what are you going to do?
It was funny. Like, we should kind of talk about that maybe a little bit. Vince kind of, you know, he cried for that it was foul play. But Vince did all the same things a decade earlier, and there was nothing wrong with it then. But, you know, now that it was happening to him, he was really upset about it. I mean, a lot of lawsuits. There's a lot of lawsuits in this era. I mean, back and forth, just so many just lawsuits back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, Vince would, you know, in the early days, he'd go, like, into people's territories, which when I hear people bitching about, like, Vince ran in somebody's territory, I'm not all about the territory thing. I mean, you can run who you want, where you want, when you want. I mean, don't worry about anybody else. But, you know, he'd go in there and, like, offer to pay the TV station to run their tapes instead of the other ones, the territory tapes and stuff like that, and he'd get those TV deals. And, you know, he even went to the cable companies when they had that first Survivor Series and Crockett was doing Starrcade 87 on the same night and said, if you want to carry WrestleMania next year, then don't carry Crockett's show. So.
Yeah, it was in between WrestleMania 3 and 4. So out of probably 100 cable stations or even more, under 10 actually ran that.
I think it was like 7 or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I know it was for sure under 10. Would actually run that Starrcade event for, and it was, Starrcade was supposed to be their big deal. Starrcade was supposed to be their big show, and that's where they thought they were going to make a lot of their money.
They were hurting financially at the time, and they needed the show.
Yes, and they didn't lose money on the show, but they only past expenses, they only made like $10,000, which was, you know, pennies for what they needed because they thought it was going to be a really big show. And it was, you know, it's kind of a shitty situation, but, you know, there's really no rules in business like this. There's no rules, so.
Then Vince did the same thing. In January, Crockett did their Bunkhouse Stampede pay-per-view, and Vince put the first Royal Rumble on opposite it. And then you remember the big one was WrestleMania 4.
Yeah, WrestleMania 4 went up against Ric Flair versus Sting, Clash of the Champions, the first one.
Yeah, Crockett kind of got a little bit of revenge on that because
he took a lot from Mania. Yeah, it got really high ratings too, but Crockett was now the small fish in a big pond, and the cable companies were really mad at him for that. For doing that, so he had to promise never to do that again.
They finally got fed up and said, "Well, you're trying to hurt Vince, but you know you're hurting us as well. You know, because the pay-per-view cable companies get a cut, and so they told both sides, you know, cut that shit out. Don't do that shit no more."
Yes. Yes. So they did that. And one thing I wanted to do was plug just real fast to plug our home website, superfriendsuniverse.com. There are a ton of awesome shows on there, so everybody should go there and check it out. And if you want to find our archive, just go to superfriendsuniverse.com/PWF. I'll plug it again at the end of the show, but I thought I would just throw that in there. All right, so we're at the second Nitro where they, you know, Bischoff gives away the results. It's him, Mongo, and I believe Bobby Heenan, the announce team. And to be honest, like, they kind of did have chemistry. Even though Mongo was bad, Bobby Heenan made fun of him enough that, it made it funny.
Bobby Heenan, anytime you get him in a broadcast position, I mean, if he's there with somebody horrible, he can make it work because he's so entertaining.
Yeah, he could make it work. He definitely could make it work. ECW at this time was really starting to blow up. And It was becoming a little bit more than an indie. It still was an indie, but it had, like, the bloodthirsty fans, and it really owned the aftermags. Like, there was a lot of coverage about it. Always was at least one story every single issue about this little upstart, you know, extreme championship wrestling. And you always read about it, and, you know, I always heard about it. And one person in particular that they would talk about very often was a high flyer by the name of Sabu. And I remember turning on the second Nitro because I loved WCW at the time, and I would watch Raw, but, I mean, I would flip back and forth. And I remember seeing Sabu. And the second I saw Sabu, I put my remote control down because them signing Sabu for the people that read those magazines, I mean, was this your first time seeing Sabu?
Yeah, this was, I mean, you know, he was just one of those awesome guys that you heard about only through the magazines at the time, unless you got to see ECW TV, which I didn't get to see that. So, yeah, I was pumped to see him actually work.
Yes, and he wrestled Alex Wright, and they, like, reversed the decision. Sabu in WCW, as you'll learn, was kind of a waste of time. He didn't really do much, but it was just showing that they were signing a lot of people. And another WCW signing that this might have been his first match, or he hadn't been there long, was IRS had jumped from the WWF to WCW. And he went back to he used to be called Michael Wall Street.
Yeah, with the York Foundation.
Yes, and he was with the York Foundation. His name was Michael Wall Street, and he was the original member of the York Foundation before he jumped to go the IRS. But WCW renamed him VK, like, Vince Kennedy, like Vince McMahon, VK Wall Street, and he debuted, and I don't know that, it was during this match that they gave away the finish to the main event on Raw, but, you know, he got squashed. I mean, he knew his place, he probably just went there for a guaranteed contract, and so Steve beat VK Wall Street, and this, but the thing about this was, As you could like, you know, listen to us and hear, there really weren't jobber matches on these shows, like Saturday Night. It was always, they knew that they were head-to-head.
Yeah, they're pretty competitive matches, all of them.
Yes, they're always going to be competitive matches. And the best part about this was, like, because of this, them going back and forth, it actually forced WWF to, you know, try making their show a little bit better. And it took them a while to do that. But, I mean, because of this, it's just awesome. It's awesome because they would actually say it in commentary, but in a way I always thought that it was true that, you know, it's like a pay-per-view. It's like you get a pay-per-view for free every Monday night. And some of these matches, you know, you'd never see, you know, Macho Man versus Scott Norton on pay-per-view. But, I mean, it's still like a pay-per-view caliber match, like match-wise. So Randy Savage beat Scott Norton on the show.
I remember the shark interfered and fell on his legs and he couldn't kick out.
Yes.
Notice how they beat all the newcomers that they promoted the week before on the show.
And this was the first time Scott Norton was back at WCW, was on the show.
Since
93 when he left before, when he was supposed to face Sting at a pay-per-view in 93, after they built him up, like, you know, very strongly.
Remember the week before Nitro, he came out and like, grabbed Bischoff? I didn't know what was going on. I thought he was going to beat the shit out of him. And Randy Savage came running out and said, Scott Norton, I was wondering when you were going to get here. Like, I guess he's been rumored to come in or something. But I just remember that.
Yes.
And then, like, Mongo McMichael first got in his face and thought there was going to be a fight there. Scott Norton, very scary man.
Scott Norton's terrifying. A really nice guy, though. And then Hogan had his match with Luger, and everybody jumped them. And then Luger agreed to be part of his team as long as he got another title shot at Hogan, which,
yeah, and
you know.
Then Randy Savage said he's got an ulterior motive. Because he was,
he's
kind of wary of him. I thought that, you know, I mean, the match wasn't much, but, you know, Hulk Hogan against Lex Luger for the first time ever, I thought was a pretty big deal.
It was a huge deal. It was a huge deal. And one thing I kind of wanted to touch upon was WCW for the first time that I had ever seen in wrestling around this time, which, you know, you could give Bischoff credit, you could give Kevin Sullivan credit, you could give Dusty Rhodes credit. I don't know who's doing it. But it was the first wrestling company that I ever saw that characters were not just heels or baby faces, but it really was not the black or white. It was like the shades of gray thing.
Yeah.
You didn't know who was really a heel, who was a baby face, who was aligned with who. It was, you really had to follow it in order to know what was going on. And that could be a good thing, that could be a bad thing.
Yeah, the best thing about this time was, like you said, you're seeing, like, good guys fight good guys. I mean, aside from, like, you wouldn't really know which side somebody's on, you get good guys fighting good guys and bad guys against bad guys, which you never got before. As I always thought, it was so stupid in wrestling how, you know, a good guy, he's not going to be able to get a title shot unless a bad guy holds a belt. You know what I mean? And a bad guy's not going to get a title shot unless a good guy holds a belt. So
exactly.
I always thought that was kind of silly, and they kind of broke that wall down around this time.
And it was a good time to break the wall down. Yeah. And it was good for all of us. And it's like we had said last week, the first half of the year was just garbage. But I mean, it's getting better, and they're working on making it better. And
People can say what they want about WCW and how it ended and whatever. But I'll give them, like, a lot of credit for, like, lighting a fire under the ass of the wrestling business in the mid-90s. You know, I think they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Of course. So Eddie Guerrero is now in WCW. He wrestles a dark match of Fall Brawl. Chris Benoit is now with WCW. Dean Malenko is coming. There's just a lot of signings going on. And this show, Fall Brawl, it opens up with a match between Johnny B. Badd and Brian Pillman.
This was awesome.
And it was by far the best match of Johnny B. Badd's career, possibly.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I mean, honestly, like, Pillman had good matches with Liger, too, but this match was so good. And, like, Pillman had, like, was a different wrestler at this time than he was when he was a high flyer. He was a different wrestler. He was more solid. Go ahead.
Yeah, he kind of gotten out of shape a little bit this time.
No, I don't think he was really out of shape. I just thought he was, like, thicker. I think he was just really on steroids.
Oh.
I didn't think he was, like, fat or anything. He was just a lot bigger, a lot broader of a guy. And
yeah.
It was just such an awesome, awesome match. And, I mean, for sure, in WCW at least, it's top 10, maybe top 5 matches of the year. I mean, it was that good of a match.
Yeah.
And off the top of my head, I can't think of many that were better. There was a guy named Cobra, who would eventually become the NWO Sting, who debuted at the...
He was also, like, one half of Thunder and Lightning. Do you remember them? Like a jobber tag team?
They were a jobber tag team. And they were doing this, like, thing where him and Craig Pittman, like, they kind of built up this match pretty good on Saturday. It was a Saturday night build for this match. But they built it up pretty good to where, you know, Cobra was supposed to be the guy that was going to take out Pittman. And, you know, I honestly thought, like, whoa, you know, they're building this guy up. And Sergeant Pittman destroyed this dude, destroyed this guy. And
I remember
at the time. Go ahead.
The match started. You know, Cobra's in the ring, and then like one of the privates of Pittman comes out. He's actually Prince Iaukea, and said, "I got a message for you from Sergeant Pittman." And in the background, you see Pittman's propelling from the ceiling, and he's just, like,
and
sliding
he,
in the...
Yeah, he didn't come down like Sting did. He came down like a secret agent, he looked like. It was so cool, like, the way he, like, came down. Like, he came down just in this way that, like, you know, he like in a movie, like an FBI agent sliding in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just like that. It was awesome. It was awesome. And Pitbull Pittman, you'll see on these Nitros coming up, he would always have really good matches, but they were never, you know, like the WCW style or even the WWF style. They were actually more so of like a Japanese strong style in a way, where he would have these like extremely stiff matches with a lot of like realistic looking belly to bellies and realistic looking clotheslines. And I always liked Pitbull Pittman, and not a lot of people share that with me, you know, share that opinion with me, but I always thought he was really good.
Yeah.
DDP was continuing his push, while at the same time, the push of the Renegade. The Renegade at this point was now known as a failed project.
Yeah.
they tried pushing him. They put him over Arn Anderson. They put him over Paul Orndorff twice. On Saturday night, they would put him over guys. He just wasn't
put him
over.
Steve Austin on one worldwide, I remember.
Yes, and he just was not getting over. So DDP, who was over, DDP was over as a heel.
I was all for DDP winning this match, get rid of this fucker.
Yes, yes. Because DDP could actually work an okay match as, you know, opposed to someone not being able to work a match at all.
Yeah.
All right, Harlem Heat beats Dirty Dick and Bunkhouse Buck to win the titles. And there was like kind of like an argument between the teams because, you know, they'd always get mad that their managers were kissing each other, and after the match, Bunkhouse Buck and Dirty Dick they blamed Colonel Parker. I cannot say that. Colonel Parker for losing the titles because he's in love with Sherry, and he was just excited that he was in love. Which, like Couture said, it was just so funny because, you know, he's playing the Southern gentleman, you know, and, like, it was believable, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And he was just so good.
It was awesome. It was awesome. Go ahead and describe the next match. Tell us the next match.
Let's see. Arn Anderson pinned Ric Flair in 23 minutes and 2 seconds with the DDT. There, Brian Pillman interfered and kicked Flair in the back of the head while the referee was down. And I guess you could consider this Arn's heel turn. I don't know if he was really that much. I think he was more of a baby face in this deal than Flair was at first. But then it was difficult to tell who to root for here, you know? It really wasn't clear, but it came a little bit clearer when Pillman interfered, and Arn Anderson cut an awesome promo for this match, one of the best ones he's ever done. And
one of the best in the history of wrestling.
Yeah, and he's talking about how it's the first time he ever threw up before a match, and I don't think he probably actually did throw up for wrestling Ric Flair.
I'm sure.
I know. And it was just an awesome promo. His match was really good, and I just love Bobby Heenan on the commentary in this. He says this is so sad. Oh, this is all because of Hulk Hogan. He's a complete piece of scum. He's gotten in between these two best friends, and I can't remember if Hogan had anything to do with it. But you know, Heenan's always blaming stuff on Hogan. So.
Yes. Yes.
And, I want to mention there was a vignette during the show. Paul Orndorff is pouting in his locker room. I guess he just got beat or something. And in walks this person. His name is Gary Spivey of the Psychic Friends Network. He looks like he's wearing a golf ball on his head. I don't know. I don't get the gimmick. I thought this was like one of these fake goofy gimmicks, but this was actually a real thing. He did have the psychic like hotline.
Yes,
so
he did.
He's saying, "You're Mr. Wonderful." And I said, "I am. I'm Mr. Wonderful." And then they had that awesome music that he started coming out to after this.
Yes, he did. One thing that I kind of wanted to add to the Flair and Arn match, they really wanted everybody to get that that big match feel for this match. So there was a lot of wrestlers that were like the younger wrestlers.
Yeah.
They were shown like sitting in the crowd watching the match. And it was half of it I felt was to give it a big match feel, but the other half was to explain why Brian Pillman was out there. And,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't like any big stars. But
like Alex Wright and Eddie Guerrero were sitting there with him, and then after he interfered, they kind of chased. Yeah, and then after they interfered, they kind of chased him away. So.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I don't know. And then there was potentially the worst War Games match there ever was. It was Hogan, Sting, Randy Savage, and Luger versus Ming, the Zodiac, Kamala, and the Shark. And of course, it was Hogan that made the Zodiac submit. So of course, Hogan's the one getting the win.
I just thought it was funny. The referee would get confused. He's always saying yes, no, yes, no, and he doesn't know if he's quitting or if he's saying no, I don't quit. You know.
In the main event match, you know, humor. So maybe the person that wrote that is not writing Raw.
And remember, on the live main event before this, Hogan got his Harley destroyed by the monster truck driven by the Giant. You know, he's showing up at the arena, and all the kids are there, and then you hear this monster truck, and he's hurrying up to brush all the children away so they don't get run over, and his Harley Davidson gets run over, and that's what leads into something on the very next paper.
Yes, and that, like, I didn't realize how big they were going to be pushing the Giant. And so Hogan gets 5 minutes alone with Kevin Sullivan in the cage, supposedly. Well, the Giant shows up, and before the chokeslam, his move was this weird thing where he, would twist his neck, like, almost like in a movie when you see Jean-Claude Van Damme break someone's neck, you know, where they twist it and you'd hear, like, a crack. He would do that. Hogan can't sell for shit, you know. Like,
it was the same move that, I don't know if you ever saw Zeus. Same move Zeus used to do to Hogan in 89 when they did that feud, and he just wrenched the neck.
I know what you're talking about. But, I mean, it was a weird, goofy thing. And, you know, it ended the show, so now we knew that Hogan was going up against this Giant. And I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, God. I was very weary of Giants in wrestling. I had heard so many things about Andre the Giant, but then my last experience, in my lifetime, with a Giant was just, you know, El Gigante, as they would call him, the Elegant. I don't know. Like, it was just so, like, I was very, very weary. I was very weary.
I thought he had a great look to him. He had a good look to him.
Of course he did. He did have a great look to him.
He was a lot more athletic.
Yeah, I just didn't know anything about him. And, you know, like, luckily I was, you know, proven wrong that, you know. So we're the next night, Mean Gene comes out, asks for Ric Flair to come out, and, you know, he kind of just tells off Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. He cannot believe what's going on, you know. And they hype that on the Saturday night coming up that they're going to check on the condition of Hulk Hogan. And Pitbull Pittman would face Cobra again. Well, also, like, on the show, Randy Savage said he was not interested in helping out Ric Flair because Ric Flair was asking for help because he knew that he couldn't take on these two guys on his own. So Randy Savage just kind of said that, you know, he's not interested in the whole Flair thing, and he still did not trust Lex Luger. And Sting, And Luger was – this is where Luger aligns with Jimmy Hart, or he doesn't align to – or he's with Jimmy Hart, right?
No, that doesn't have until Halloween Havoc.
Okay, so –
they're still playing up – you know, in the War Games, he accidentally hit Randy Savage, you know, to keep that – build up more heat there. But he was still by himself at this point.
And it's so awesome because Randy Savage, like, you know, said, like, you know, Jimmy Hart and Sting and Luger, they're joining. They're joining the Dungeon of Doom. You need to know this. This is happening. And, you know, Hogan's not having any of it, of course. He's not going to believe anything like that. And it's such a weird thing going on because, like, for what eventually happens. All right, so Nitro's on just to prove that anything can happen on Nitro. They have Mark Bagwell and his partner of the year. This time it's this guy, Scotty Riggs. Scotty Riggs was he would wrestle on a lot of worldwide shows and lose to everybody. And
yeah, he was Scott.
He was a jobber. I mean,
was his name?
Yeah. Yes, and he was just a jobber. Well, they put him with Mark Bagwell, and like almost immediately they wrestle for like maybe 3 weeks on the, you know, worldwide Saturday night type shows. And
you remember those videos?
Those
American Male vignettes?
Oh, American Males. American Males. Yeah, they were like, all right, I have seen gay porn less homoerotic than these videos that they would put out for Mark Bagwell and Scotty Riggs. Like, I mean, it really seemed like some of these things that they were, like, you know, showing them doing, like, it looked like sometimes, like, they were just going to go in for a kiss or something. And then, of course, there'd be times where they'd just, like, randomly be, not necessarily dancing, but, like, show up somewhere on one of these vignettes, and a bunch of girls would surround them, and, like, music would come out of nowhere, and then they'd just start dancing. It was so weird. It was great stuff, though. Great television. Great, great, great television.
Now, this was...
So...
This was stupid right here, this first match. Okay, it's supposed to be the American Males against the Blue Bloods. And Harlem Heat won the tag team titles the night before. So the American Males are in the ring, and all of a sudden the Blue Bloods get attacked by Harlem Heat. For what reason, I don't know. And they say, well, we're taking their place in this match, and we're going to put the titles up. I say, okay. 2 minutes later, he beat them. And all of them look like total geeks. I don't know why they came out here. You know what I mean? You don't see too many heels come out and say, I'm going to put the title on the line right now against the babyface, just like out of nowhere. It just was stupid.
And Paul Orndorff, after getting his psychic assistance from, you know, that Gary Spivey with a sponge head, beat Johnny B. Badd. And it was... I always thought it was so weird because Johnny B. Badd had just wrestled this, like, amazing match with Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
And he beat him in the match. But then Paul Orndorff beating Johnny B. Badd kind of makes him and Pillman look like idiots. Because, you know, like, he had this weird dude with this, you know, I don't know. He has, like, his new robe and this amazing theme music. Amazing theme music. We got to find it and play it next week. Because that's just awesome. Awesome music.
That was one of those songs you remember, like Steven Regal's What a Man song. You know?
Yes.
It was one like that. It's just one that'd stick in your head.
Yes. I remember that. He's a man. Yeah. Ric Flair wrestled Brian Pillman. And it was... He beat him in, like, 5 minutes. And, like, why didn't they, like, give this a DQ finish?
I have no idea. I would have had Arn come in to interfere and then do the double team and then Ric Flair challenge him for the next week. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Pillman just turned heel the night before. Johnny B. Badd won a match the night before and then lost here, so I don't know. I don't know why they do what they do.
As you could tell... The booking was still not perfect. Still not perfect.
No.
All right, so let's jump a week ahead. Next Night Hero.
We should mention, you know, the Pillman Johnny Bad match, that was to get a contender for who was going to face Sting on Saturday night the following week for the United States Heavyweight Championship. And so Johnny B. Bad hasn't shown up yet. They try to have the match, like, at the beginning of the show, he's not there. They try again in the middle of the show, he's not there. And finally they say, well, we're just going to give Pillman the match since he's here and Johnny B. Bad isn't, so Sting beats Pillman. Then Johnny B. Bad shows up with, you know, he's in his street clothes, and then DDP comes out, and Max Muzzle says, yeah, it's, Johnny B. Bad said he had car trouble. And Max Muscle says, yeah, it's kind of hard to get around on four flat tires. And Johnny B. Bad says, I said I had a flat tire, not four flat tires. And then he knocked DDP out. Because obviously
yeah.
DDP and had
Max Muscle did.
Yeah, had slashed his tires or something like that. So that starts that feud.
Yes, yeah, it was starting a feud. And that's, oh, gosh, that was so awesome. That was so awesome. Because they actually had a pretty good feud, too. That, you know, this whole thing.
Yeah.
The next week in Florence, South Carolina, was one of those Nitro, it was on Nitro, of course, the Pitbull-Pittman matches. It was the second match of the show. Alex Wright beat Disco Inferno in a nothing match. But then Kurosawa wrestled Sergeant Craig Pitbull-Pittman. And Pitbull-Pittman, like, you don't know if he's a face or a heel. He's one of those gray characters. And they had a hell of a match. They beat the shit out of each other in this match. Do you remember this?
Not really.
Oh, gosh. Try finding it on YouTube or, you know, I believe it's on YouTube. But, they really did. They just, you know, beat the hell out of each other on
one of those matches where you can see that things are philosophies changing on bad guys and good guys.
Yes, two
heels right here going at it.
Yes. Kevin Sullivan was the leader of the Dungeon of Doom, but he rarely wrestled. He would wrestle maybe once a month, it seemed like. Or if he wrestled, he would wrestle on Worldwide against a jobber. I mean, because he didn't really have big-time matches. Like, you never really saw him have big-time matches until, like, you know, another year or two when he wrestled Benoit. But, I mean, he didn't really have these big main event matches. But he wrestled Randy Savage, and, like, it was just a really short match. And, of course, he ran out, and then the Giant came and, you know, beat up on Randy Savage. But, like, the jobbers that would be on Saturday night, it seemed like they were always the one to try, like, instead of security, they would always send the jobbers out. And Frankie Lancaster and Mark Starr and Alex Wright, who's also a jobber, would try stopping all of them.
I just figured that those guys wanted TV time. That's the only reason they came out to help.
Probably. And Luger, what was with this?
You mean this match with him and Maine?
It was not that, like, yeah, like, he lost.
Yeah, because he came out and got involved in the Randy Savage match, and, you know, John gave him a choke slam. Then they started his match with Ming, like, right after that. So he was, I was shocked that, I was glad Ming beat him, because Ming was always one of my favorites, but I was just kind of shocked Luger lost so soon after coming in.
Yes, it was very odd. But, you know, it was one of those things. And it was also, like, they were trying to prove that Luger was not going to turn on Savage. He was trying to save him. So he, like, you know, he fought with the Giant a little bit to try protecting him. But one thing we didn't mention was Kevin Sullivan yelled at the Giant for attacking Luger. So it kept planting the seeds that Luger was turning heel, but Luger was trying to, like, prove everybody otherwise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that happened. The Nitro after that, Luger and Savage, even though he helped him, Luger and Savage still had a match. And
yeah, because during the show the week before, I think it was Sting had come out to try to get them to resolve these differences and said, well, why don't you two guys just have a match next week and, you know, we can resolve this in the ring. So that's how this match came about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was Luger said he would leave WCW if he lost this match. Opening match on Nitro. Which, you know, say what you want about TNA, but they never did this.
Yeah.
And Ric Flair beat Arn Anderson on the second match of the show. And then, you know, he got jumped by Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman after the match. And then they did Eddie Guerrero versus Dean Malenko. And they had just had, like, a bunch of really good matches with each other in ECW. And they had, like, a kind of a short match because they only had TV time, you know. And they had a good match. But one funny thing about this was during the theme music for Eddie Guerrero, Disco Inferno just showed up, like, at the entranceway and just started dancing to the music for no reason. He was just there. Because Disco has been around for a little bit now. Maybe a couple of weeks, maybe?
Yeah, I think maybe about a month or so.
Yeah, yeah. But what a great character Disco Inferno was. He was just awesome. Hogan shows up wearing a neck brace.
Yeah, you didn't get to see
much
of this Guerrero-Malenko match because of his limo bullshit.
Yes, yes. Stupid.
I remember that. Because I was so looking forward to this match from reading about it in all the magazines and stuff.
They're dumb. And Jimmy Hart, like, was almost doing, like, they eventually did the storyline again where when Paul Heyman was kind of telling Brock Lesnar that he couldn't beat the Big Show. And then he eventually just turned on him. And this is kind of like the same thing, where he's saying, like, you know, you can't beat the Giant. He's too big. He's too strong. And it was, I don't know.
I remember
really
on this show, they had the Dungeon Doom attack Hulk Hogan. He had his neck, he was in a neck brace, and they attacked him. And then it was really cool. They shaved his mustache. It was a really big deal.
Yes. That, it was a huge deal because Hogan had never shaved his mustache. And
yeah. Whenever somebody gets their hair cut or something like that, it's always a big deal, you know, for some reason. People just like to see that stuff. But, yeah, you could never imagine Hulk Hogan without the mustache. He looked weird.
When does Hogan start wearing black?
I think it was right at this time. I think maybe the week after or something like that.
And Hogan made a comment. Like, Hogan made a comment saying, you know what a man that wears black clothes and black gloves and a black glove can do, brother? Which this was right during the middle of the whole... not right then. It was like the trial was going on, I believe, though.
Yeah.
The O.J. Simpson trial.
It had to have been because, you know, the glove don't fit, you can't, you must have quit. So that's where you kind of got the line about the gloves and stuff like that.
Yes. So Hogan, you know, gosh, like, what a tasteless comment. But, you know, he's Hogan. He has to attack. But we love him for that, you know? What can you do?
Yeah.
Sting beat the Shark in a minute. And you know, the Shark is, you know, he was like in, like, the Three Faces of Fear, which was kind of like the beginning of the Dungeon of Doom, I guess, in a way. Like, he was a member of that, you know. And now, as he's back as a Shark, which he even changed his tiger tattoo to a shark to match the character, was kind of just a bust, you know. It was such a weird thing, the whole shark thing. Sabu beat Mr. JL, Jerry Lynn, with the camel clutch, and Big Bubba wrestled Road Warrior Hawk. And once again, Disco Inferno shows up for no reason. Like, I mean, like, I could understand him coming out during the Eddie Guerrero D. Malenko match because they're all light. But why would he go to try dancing with Road Warrior Hawk?
I think it's just to show how stupid he is.
Yes. Yes. It was just,
I mean,
because
who
so
would do
dumb.
That?
Yeah.
And then I guess he got
exactly.
his revenge because it's, I guess it's, just, I don't know what this is supposed to be. And then Hulk kind of glared at him, and then he started walking, and Disco ran up to some kid, took his WCW cap, and hung it on one of Hulk's spikes on his shoulder pads or something like that. I don't know if that's how you start a feud, but maybe that's how you start a feud back then. I don't know.
Arn Anderson beat Ric Flair after hitting him in a steel cage match, after hitting him with a foreign object.
Everybody
is another one of those things where...
Everybody in this feud's been beat so far. Like, it
yeah,
seems like every week.
So, yeah, so, I mean, no one has a clear advantage, it seems like. And the weird thing about Nitro was they have all these great talent, like, all this great talent, you know, and it's only an hour show. At first, it was only an hour show.
Yeah.
But all these matches were so short. I mean, at most, 5 minutes you'll get. And Flair, after the match, challenged Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman to face him the next week on Nitro in either a tag match or a handicap match. So,
And I think it was the following Saturday he tried recruiting Sting. That's where he first started doing that.
Yes, yes.
He was in the ring and... and did he bring a bunch of little Stingers in there to kind of, he was kind of using them to kind of sway Sting to be his partner or something like that? I can't remember.
This whole thing, like this whole storyline was, Sting had said that, you know, last time I trusted you, you crossed me. And they're going back to about 1989 or 1990 where Ric Flair, or Sting was part of the Horsemen. And he earned a title shot against Ric Flair, so they kicked him out of the Horsemen. And Sting mentioned that had happened last time he trusted him. Like it was probably the Saturday Night interview, right?
Yeah, and this is where Sting, I think this has kept his reputation going as the dumbest babyface of all time. Because I saw exactly where this was going when it started.
Yes, everybody did. Everybody did.
I mean, I enjoyed it anyway. I still enjoyed it. I just, you know, I knew where
it was
going.
Oh, it was so great. It was so great. Johnny B. Badd, Russell DDP, beaten by DQ. This whole feud was, it was really starting to fire up at this, you know, right then. You know, they're going to have, like, you know, a million matches over the next couple of months. But, I mean, it's really good. It's good stuff. Mean being Jim Duggan. Jim Duggan started to get pushed down the card even more. You know, he went from being a contender to a jobber very quickly, like Eric Watts level of quickly falling down the card. Lost to Ming. Ming beat him with that, like, Tongan death grip. Benoit is now in WCW. He beat Eddie Guerrero with a dragon suplex.
The powerbomb he gave him in this match was the stiffest powerbomb I've ever seen in my life. Do you remember that?
I do not remember the particular powerbomb.
I don't want to sound I don't want to sound morbid or anything, but if if when Eddie Guerrero died, it came out that he died of concussion issues, I'd blame this power bomb that Chris Benoit hit him with. This was the stiffest power bomb I've ever seen. His head just bounced off the fucking mat. I'll never forget that.
I'll have to watch it. I'll have to watch. I have this.
Yeah, yeah. Go to YouTube and find this.
I definitely will. Sting and Ric Flair beat Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman by countout. Sting wasn't sure to trust Ric Flair, but after the match, he said to Mean Gene that Flair earned his trust. And he'd be willing to team up with him at Halloween Havoc. This, like, when we were saying, like, weird things, Sting had his hand in so many storylines and angles at this time. It was so crazy. Because he's still Hogan's friend. He's Luger's friend. He's Macho Man's friend. He's trying to, you know, settle this thing between Macho Man and Lex Luger. He's trying to fight with Hogan against the Dungeon of Doom. And now he's also with Ric Flair to fight Pillman and Arn Anderson. And, I mean, like, I was always surprised, like, not always, I guess. I mean, like, just, like, ever since I've been, like, you know, rewatching all this stuff the past couple of years, how Hogan kind of let this happen. Because Sting was, you know, he was wearing many hats, you know, and they were all pretty big spots, too. I always thought it was weird that, you know, Hogan let it happen.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you think about the Macho Man and Luger storyline?
I liked it. I mean, it was one of those I couldn't tell where it was going to go, where it was going to end, so, you know, it kept me interested each and every week. Because on one hand, you think Luger's going to turn, and you don't know what Randy's at. Well, nobody ever knows what Randy's at is thinking. So, I mean, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea.
All right, so the last Nitro, the go-home show for Halloween Havoc. And they're setting all the cards, you know what I mean? And Hogan on the show said that Sting, Lex Luger, and Randy Savage are all not his friends if he's going into this match. Because he's wearing all black and he's like this dark character, or he wants to be this dark character. He challenges them all to wrestle him. Why, I don't know. And so they're all, you know, like Hogan trusts nobody, apparently. Yeah. And Randy Savage wrestles Kurosawa, who was giving them a mini push and beats them with the flying elbow drop. Eddie Guerrero teams up with Mr. JL, and he beats Benoit and Dean Malenko, which, these guys, they would always have matches with each other. And it was always a bright spot on Nitro. You know, that you'd always see that, like, that was the action part of it before the luchador.
It was better when you watch Saturday Night with these guys because they got more time.
Yes, and they would. The only reason I'm talking about Nitro is more so than Saturday Night was because there's no real storyline developments going on Saturday Night. Anything that was important, they would talk about on Nitro.
Yeah.
And Sting and Lex Luger beat the Harlem Heat. And they were doing this because, as you'll hear the storyline of what's about to happen in Halloween Havoc in a second, but they were just kind of showing that these guys were a united team and they were friends. Sting and Lex Luger are friends going into Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people already know that because, you know, they legit owned a business together, like a gym, and they remember the earlier runs in WCW where they were best friends. So people could see why he would kind of stick up for them.
Yes, yes. The Giant and the rest of the Dungeon Doom come out and they attack Sting. And Luger, he kind of disappeared, didn't he? Or he fought to the back with the Harlem Heat or something. He was gone though. He was gone when the whole dungeon came out.
But Savage and Hogan made the save. Didn't he say earlier that none of these people were his friends? Why is he coming out with Savage?
Of course. whatever, you know. And then this wrestler by the name of The Yeti. And The Yeti was Ron Reese, right? Was it Ron Reese?
Yeah. Big Ron Studd.
Yes, Big Ron Studd. And he's this giant guy. And he wears literally a mummy outfit. And he comes out walking like a mummy. And this is freaking the end of 1995, okay? Like, we're getting modern here. It's 95, you know, there's MTV and metal music and, you know, there's all this shit is modern. It's not the 80s anymore. It's not the early 90s. It's, you know what I mean? It's a year before, or less than a year before the NWO, and they have this mummy. You know, what can you really say?
Did anybody bother to look up what a Yeti actually is? It ain't a fucking mummy.
Well, they thought it was.
That's like saying, that's like Bigfoot busting out of the block of ice and he looked like Frankenstein. No.
Yes.
A Yeti is supposed to be like a Sasquatch Bigfoot type thing. Not a mummy.
Yes. Yes, but they knew no better. Hogan probably thought it was a good idea, and that's what they went with. All right. WCW, Halloween Havoc, 1995, a big day in the life of Sinbad, because it was in Detroit, and I watched it live on pay-per-view with my grandmother's cheater box. I was stoked for the show. And this always, to me, signaled the beginning of the new WCW, like, being edgier. I always looked at this show as that. DDP and Johnny B. Badd wrestled. Johnny B. Badd beat him for the TV title. A really good match. Johnny B. Badd, like, it's so weird, like, how we'll say, like, people have, like, their best matches with him or, you know, it was very odd that, you know, what he became, because Mark Merrill's kind of like a joke now, you know, and he really was a good wrestler.
He's the guy with the list now.
Yes.
He was good. I don't think he gets enough credit for being a good worker.
He was good. So he wins the title. There's a Max Muscle tries interfering and backfires, and then he just won the title, or not? He wins the title. It's Randy Savage and Lex Luger. They have this thing going where they both wrestle matches, but even after they wrestle their matches, they want to match with each other as well.
Yeah, both of them won their matches, they would face each other. I can't remember how this came about.
I think it was on a Nitro.
I think they just, like, randomly had just thrown out these two matches, like Savage and Zodiac and Luger and Maine, as just being undercard on the pay-per-view. And then the issue started building up in between that. And they said, well, if you win your match and I win my match, then let's have a... You against me later on in the show, so that's how it came out.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So he beat the Zodiac in about a minute and a half.
This was when a fan ran in the ring. Do you remember that?
Yes. it was actually announced Randy Savage versus Kamala.
Kamala said he was afraid of Randy Savage, so...
And so, yeah, Kevin Sullivan beat him up and sent him back to Uganda. But, yes, a fan ran in, and was that the one where didn't Randy Savage hit him?
I think maybe I don't know if he hit him, but I'm pretty sure he took a swipe at him. You know, I can't remember if he hit him or not.
There's very few people I love more than Randy Savage, for the record. Kurosawa beat Road Warrior Hawk, and, you know, he cheated to win. And this is a big win for Kurosawa. And I, like, once again, like, he's getting this push, and he just lost to Macho Man a week ago, not even, but he beat Road Warrior Hawk. So, you know, it was just odd. Sabu had the Sheik, because this is in Detroit.
Yeah.
Sabu had the Sheik in his corner, and he beat Mr. JL, and the Sheik threw a fireball into Mr. JL's face. And I always thought it was, like, it was awesome that, you know, he did that. And it was, you know, it was awesome. It was just cool.
I love when anybody pulls off a good-looking fireball. That's always cool.
Yeah, and he did that. He did that.
And
Luger beat Ming.
This was one where Sabu, he did like the Ice Age moonsault and took out the Sheik on accident. I think Sheik broke his hip or something like that.
Damn, what was it?
During the match, Sabu went for like an Ice Age moonsault on JL on the outside, and he hit JL, but the Sheik was right there, and he took the Sheik down too, and I think he may have broken his hip. Because I remember he went into the hospital after this.
Oh, yeah, that's I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. See, Couture is dropping knowledge on all of us, as usual. When Luger wrestled Ming, it was, like, didn't Ming hit Luger with that spike, right?
Yeah, same way he won the first match.
Yeah. Well, he was going to win the match, but then, like, Sullivan kicked him very lightly.
Yeah, he came in. Well, he kicked Luger, you know, so Ming would get DQ'd.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Because he wanted him in that match for Randy Savage.
Yes, which is, you know, pretty witty move by Mr. Kevin Sullivan. What was it? Sting and Flair wrestled Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. Go ahead and explain what happened and how it all built up, because you're way better at it than I am.
It built up earlier in the day. They were saying that Flair had been attacked by Anderson and Pillman, and they weren't sure if he was going to be able to make the match. So Sting comes out. He says he's going to go out there by himself. And Sting goes out there and has this handicap match. And after a little while, they get Sting down. And then finally, Flair comes out with his head bandaged. And he's just a cheerleader in the corner. He said, "Stand tall, Stinger, stand tall. Never give up, never give up." And he's pumping up the crowd. The crowd, you know, they want to get this hot tag. So finally, Sting goes over, makes the tag. Flair comes right in. Does the little strut, and he punches Sting right in the nose. And it was like one of the greatest things I've ever seen, because I knew it was coming. And it was great because the crowd was into it. The announcers were, you know, they were on the edge of their seat waiting for the hot tag, and he comes right in and like, "What the fuck? You people should know this is going to happen." I mean, I was old. I can't remember how old I was. I was in my 20s, and I knew it was going to happen, so. But then they did the big beatdown. And Sting was awesome in this because after the punch, you know, he said if Flair ever, you know, if he screwed him, you know, he's a dead man. And then Sting starts to get up and just starts to do, just like go right after Flair with his arms flailing like he's going crazy, which is wanting to kill this man. But they beat him down, you know, 3-on-1. So.
It was awesome. It was a great, great – you knew what was happening, but – It worked out so great, and that punch that Flair gave to Sting was awesome. It looked like he just jacked him hard. He probably did, you know.
And then
it was great.
Flair took the bandage off to reveal there was no cut. Also, if there was no cut, then how did the doctors say he couldn't wrestle? I don't know. I'm thinking too much.
Well, you know, what could you do?
Yeah. It was good, though.
Yes, it was. And what do we got next?
We got the Monster Truck Challenge.
All right. So it's Hogan's Monster Truck versus the Big Show's Monster Truck.
Yeah, and
all right, not the Big Show, the Giant. Sorry.
And aren't they like the front bumpers are both welded together or something?
They got welded together.
The only way to win is to push the other guy's monster truck, you know, out of the circle. And strategically set up in the circle are like charges of dynamite or C4 or something. And, you know, they were just sliding around. I think it had been raining. Or maybe it had been snowing or something. I don't know what it was like back then in that part of the country. And they were sliding all over the place. And one charge would go up and Bischoff would say, "We have a charge. We have a charge." And it didn't affect any of the trucks. So I don't know what the point was other than to have an explosion. And then Hogan finally guns it and he pushes the Giant out of the circle. Now, first off, I wouldn't be playing monster trucks on top of a building. Because, I don't know, monster trucks can pretty much go over anything. There's too much danger of me going over the side of a building in a monster truck if I'm on top of it, so I ain't having that. And so Hogan gets out, and he wins, and then the Giant gets after him. And they're doing this horrible fake fighting. And so they get to the edge, and conveniently both of them just step right up on the ledge, Hogan just flails his arm in the air, and the Giant does this. You ever seen somebody when they just lose their balance and their arms start waving and waving and waving like they're trying to catch their balance or something
like
that?
Like, whoa, whoa, whoa!
Yeah. He just falls off. And Hogan says, "Oh, my God, somebody please help. Somebody please help. Help, help." And Bischoff and Heenan and Bob Chandler, he was the guy, he designed these monster trucks, and he was doing commentary with him. And they're all looking at each other, and Bob says, "That wasn't supposed to happen." And like, "No shit, Bob, that wasn't supposed to happen. The guy just fell off the roof of the Cobalt Hall." And even Bischoff saw how stupid that statement was, that it was supposed to happen, so sort of giving him the timeout sign, like, you know, "Don't say anything. We're done with you." So, but this was one of those, it was so bad I was entertained by it. It wasn't boring and bad, it was entertaining and bad.
Yes, yes. I mean, like, the same review, I mean, it seems like there's a billion things on it, but there really were. I mean, it's only 3 hours, but there's so much to the show. There's still a lot of stuff left, too.
Well, during this match, I was going to say, maybe it was before this match, it was Shivani and Heenan were out there, and they were doing like an on-camera, still talking about what happened. And Bobby Heenan's saying, "Can we find out what happened?" And he just keeps on asking. Nobody says anything. And he says, "Tony, you don't understand what me and his father went through all those years." You know, he's so like the son of Andre. And he says, "Why does nobody care? Why can we not get any information? We can talk to people on the moon. We can't find out what's happening 50 feet from here. What's the problem? What's the problem? What's the problem?" And then he says, "You guys just don't care." And Tony says, "I do so care." I said, "No, you don't." And then he just throws up his hand and walks off the set. He didn't go find out what happened himself. It was awesome.
We actually do have a call on the line. Let's see if we can see what's going on. Area code 631, what's going on?
Hey, Contreras and Dad, it's Sky Kid from the board.
Hey, what's going on, Sky Kid?
Hey, I just wanted to talk about Halloween Havoc, and I know you're going to get to it, but the main event on that show, the title match.
Why don't you just stay on the line for just a second? I mean, and we'll get to that. We'll explain what happened, and then we'll talk to you about it. It'll be like, you know, just a couple of minutes. All right, we'll be right here. All right, so Randy Savage wrestled Lex Luger. And Randy Savage just beats Luger after Luger collides with Jimmy Hart, who is out there for, like, it's just weird why he was out there. And
I think they were playing it up like he was trying to get, like, some information or trying to relate some information about what happened on the roof or something like that. I'm not really sure. That's kind of how they played it up in the commentary.
And Heenan left after he gave that little spiel. So Randy Savage was the match. And now we're to the main event, the Giant versus Hulk Hogan for the title. And at the end of the match, I mean, there's the first thing, Giant comes out, not a scratch on him. He's not wet, but he didn't fall in the river. He's not bruised up or dead. So he comes out with no explanation. We never ever get one.
They should at least. It was so absurd. They should at least had him like pulling fish out of his tights and stuff like that on the way to the ring.
Yeah, you know, Bobby Heenan said that. Yeah, he should have fish in his tights. All right, so
And Hogan's look on his face when the Giant came out was priceless. He was like the most calm movie in the world.
Yeah, well. So the Giant hits the choke slam. Hogan kicks out. He hulks up. And then Jimmy Hart, for no reason, just, like, I mean, I guess because he was turning heel, hits the referee. So it's like a DQ. And then Lex Luger and Randy Savage come out. And Lex Luger turns on Randy Savage and puts him in torture rack. And then the Yeti comes out, and him and it was a Giant start fucking Hogan's sandwich over here.
It was a Hogan sandwich.
Yeah. Like, what would that possibly do to anybody? Then like, Luger puts Hogan in the torture rack, and the thing is, Sting didn't come out because Sting was already hurt by the, you know, what will be the Horseman. So it made perfect sense how to keep the storyline with Luger and Sting going, you know, as friends. And then, you know, then the Giant took the belt, and, like, Hogan and Savage are just laying there. And Hogan is, like, he has this look on his face, like, why was I just fucked by two giant men? And, all right, Sky Kid.
I just want to say, I think that was, like, as a kid, like, I was so confused. I was confused about how the heck did the Giant, like, survive a 50-foot fall? Why did Jimmy Hart have this elaborate plan to disqualify his own guy? And why did, and now that I'm older, it's like, man, this is like, with the double sandwich, that is like the gayest thing in the history of pro wrestling. I'm sorry. It's even gayer than the whole Alex Wright, Jim Powers thing on the beat. Pro. That is just, all
right, well, the whole Jimmy Hart thing, I think, made perfect sense the next night because Jimmy Hart was turning on him, so
he made
the contract.
As an adult
watching the Giant fall 50 feet or whatever, or 500 feet or how long or how far it was, I don't understand how that happened. No one understands how that happened. And as far as the gay hug, I mean, at least we could say it was romantic. I mean, it was. And
it gave him double penetration.
Yes. It was. Contreras, please.
At least the moment he protected himself. You know, he's all wrapped up. I'll say that wasn't gayer than the New Generation video. The New Generation video is still the gayest video I've ever seen in my life.
New Generation is the best.
Hey, what was the New Generation video?
This was one that somebody sent, it was like one of those Memphis videos vignettes where, you know, like, they got the two young guys and they're They're showing them riding four-wheelers together and pushing each other into the swimming pool and riding horses together, just to, like, build them up. And it was, like, the gayest thing I've ever seen. It's on YouTube, and Brian and Vinny do commentary on it over the video, and I never laughed so hard in my life.
The best part is someone does a flying elbow into the pool, I swear to Christ.
Yeah. And they're sitting on this fence post, and they're like, straddling it, but they're straddling it. It's like there's, like, 4 inches between them, so they're, like, right up on each other. It was... Anyway.
What can you really say? I mean, obviously, we have to end the show after Halloween Havoc. I mean, we'll get to the rest of the year next week because we knew it's going to take longer after Nitro. But
I will say that this was like kind of the end of a lot of the. This was like kind of the end of a lot of the really stupid stuff that we've been talking about for like in the previous few months. It kind of got a little bit more serious after this.
It did get a lot more serious after this, but I mean, this show was, I mean, honest to God, it was a very influential show to a young Sinbad. I mean, I had it on VHS because I recorded it live, and I probably watched the show, I mean, at least 20 times in my lifetime, and now that I'm thinking about this, I have it, like, transferred to DVD, the same exact copy, and I'm going to watch it again because what a great show. It's definitely a 10 out of 10. I mean, what more could you ask from that Halloween Havoc? Could you add anything?
Maybe a couple of good wrestling matches. I don't know. Could not add
what
more
about
comments.
You, guy kid?
Well, what can you add? You have, like, Jerry Lynn in a Power Rangers mask. You have gay double humping. You have Sabu blown spots. I mean, you have it all in the pay-per-view right there.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I mean, like, Couture, at the end of the day, what would you rate the pay-per-view? 2 thumbs up? 1 thumb up? 2 thumbs down? Thumbs in the middle?
I do... Just on entertainment value alone, I got to give it 2 thumbs up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm sure you agree with them, right, Sky Kid?
Yeah. 3 thumbs up.
Yes. Yeah, the third thumb is my erect penis, because that matches, or that show is just so awesome. Okay. All right, so we're going to end the show here after Halloween Havoc. Thank you very much for calling in, Sky Kid. Call in any time.
I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say next show about the World Cup in Arcade 95, because that was awesome. So.
Hey, real quick, Scott, yes. do you remember that powerbomb that Benoit gave Eddie Guerrero I was talking about?
I actually just tuned into the show, so have to hear it back.
Oh,
in the
man.
Archive.
Yeah. You'll have to listen to the archive.
I'm going to find this match, and I'm going to put a link up in the thread. Anybody that hasn't
seen it,
they can watch it.
All right. Yeah, definitely do that, man. Definitely do that. All right, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will be back, of course, next week to talk about the end of 1995. We should, we'll finish off the year for sure, maybe go into a little bit of 96. And if you guys want to check out the archive of this show, go to superfriendsuniverse.com and then click on the PWF link, or just check out the other great shows on that website, and download this. Tell everybody to download this. We want a lot of people to listen to these shows. We are more into the show than we have been, before. Tara and I are both really into this. So, everybody keep listening. Those few that do. All right, so we will be back next week at 8:00. Anything else you want to add, Couture?
No, that's it.
All right. We are out of here. All right. Thanks, everybody.